Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome into the Pro Cross Faceoff, the August 3rd edition, championship weekend edition. I'm James Boger, joined as always by my co-host Tom Bovey. Couldn't be more excited to be doing this week. It's been incredibly exciting couple weeks. I know we've been kind of going back and forth between having the show and not having the show, but we're super pumped to be here. As always, we're presented by Lacrosse or LaxDirt.com. And as always, I apologize for not having that intro right. We still haven't done that. It's been a year. It's been kind of insane. Today, we are going to be thrilled to be welcomed by Scott Ratliff at 8:10. He's going to be in a couple minutes to kind of give his reflections on this and give his case to be what most expect to be a two-player race for Defensive Player of the Year, which is going to be announced tomorrow. We've had a bunch of awards be announced the past couple days. Tom and I are going to get into that. We're also going to talk about a lot of what we were surprised about based off all the teams that are not going to be appearing this next weekend in Atlanta. And with that being said, I want to welcome to the co-host, Tom Bovey, fresh off watching his son score a game-winning goal in a soccer game. He's made a gracious appearance. Tom, first off, give the insights from the game-winning goal, because I'm sure that's on the forefront of your mind.
Oh, we're just having a blast. It's a last day of soccer for the kids for the summer, and they have their big championship game at the end, and you know, go ahead and score the game-winning goal and get the celebration out of the way, because worked out perfect. It was awesome. Had a blast. Proud dad.
I mean, my big question is, what was the celebration? Was he ripping the shirt off? Was he signing the soccer ball and throwing it to all the young ladies in the stands? Or did he handle it like he's been there before? Because that's the big thing I feel like I need to know.
It was pretty much just a straight fist pump. No serious crazy celebration. They're only 9, so, you know, not too crazy yet.
Oh, well, I mean, acting like you've been there before, I think, is the best possible way to go about celebrating everything. And speaking of acting like you've been there before, I think the polar opposite is, I don't know if we've been here before with the games that we had this past weekend and kind of where we're at in this, in really this sport, which is kind of amazing, because over the weekend we had two really incredible matchups. We had the ups and downs of four teams vying to get to Atlanta. And I don't know about you, but I think this new playoff structure really works, where you actually get a home game. You're able to kind of experience exactly what being the better team throughout the course of the regular season involves. And what that is home field advantage. What do you think about how the second year of how these playoff structures work, and how do you think the games went in a general perspective this past weekend?
I don't know that home field advantage is as big as people think it is, because players are traveling regardless. So home field advantage or not, it's great to have your home crowd there, but, I mean, obviously what we saw, one home team win, one home team lose. So, you know, throw home field advantage up in the air as to whether or not it worked. It was great lacrosse, and I think it makes for a better championship game. I went to plenty of the championship weekends over the years where you got the two semifinals on Saturday and the championship on Sunday, and they're really, you got great games. They were really great environments, great situations, great setups. You still had terrific lacrosse. But to see the best, the absolute best game in the best situation, you need to have the break in between. You need to give these guys a week to prepare, a week to get ready, a week to prep for each other, and a week to recover from the train wrecks that happened Saturday.
Yeah, and I think the big thing to take into account is the fact that I think this actually does, even though it may not be a home field advantage, I think this is a great way to reward the fans of the teams that do well throughout the course of the regular season. Because when you have a neutral site and you do it over the course of a weekend, and you do mention the turnaround time, which I think is a huge thing, especially when these guys do travel as much as they do, you're really rewarding the fans who stuck with the team through and throughout every week. by awarding them a home playoff game, which, you know, I mean, in general, I don't think any sporting event, when you have an outdoor venue, I don't think you really have a home field advantage unless you have elements involved. I mean, everyone can talk about places like Lambeau Field or CenturyLink Field in Seattle as far as football is concerned, but as far as anything else is concerned, I really don't know if you have a huge advantage if you're not being exposed to anything. But I think in general, the way this new playoff structure works, like I keep saying, you did mention the fact that there is a little bit more of a wait time between the semifinals and the finals. And I think that makes a big difference as far as game prep, makes a difference as far as recovery time, because you do want the best players to be at their best in the premier event for this league, which is huge. But I think that in general, the way they're starting to structure everything now rewards the best teams in the league, and it rewards their fans, which is the biggest thing ever. But in general, I thought we experienced two phenomenal games this weekend. I think that's the biggest thing, because I think that if you tune in, you can sense how much these players want it. And you have games that come down to the wire, and you have two teams now that are going to be vying for a championship, one team that we expected the whole way, and one team that, as you so eloquently pointed out in our text over the weekend, that I almost dismissed. What do you feel like, in general, this championship matchup is going to bring to the fans watching it in a week's time?
Well, at first I'm going to go back to the fan part of the previous weekend and say that, you know, championship weekend attendance or championship game attendance isn't going to be what it was in the past. You used to get a three-game package. You got to see both semifinals and the championship. So overall, the attendance will probably be down for the particular championship game because you drew fans from all over. A person like me who lives away from any team is far more likely to travel for a three-game package than just a championship game. But at the same time, like you said, you're rewarding the fans that have followed these teams, the people who have been there game in and game out, the people who have you know, watched these players go crazy, the true fans of each franchise as far as the top two, are getting their opportunity. And, you know, if your team advances, you still should try to make every attempt to go to the championship game. I honestly would favor a potential two-week gap between semifinal and final, like we see in some sports where you give fans time to plan the trip. Because, you know, if you're a New York fan, like you said, you maybe had this trip booked 6 months ago, or at least that'll be the easy thing for people in lacrosse to say. You know, the easy thing is to say they're supposed to be there. You know, everybody picked this all along. Whereas Rochester fans, this is not a shock. I mean, they were here last year, but it's still they weren't the favorite to be here. They weren't the favorite to make it back to the championship game. And you know what? It took a Herculean effort on their part, and we did get to see two of the best games of the season over the weekend. Kind of different styles. One was high scoring with two huge comebacks, and the other one was kind of a slower paced, more defensive dominated effort on Rochester's part. So we got to see both of the teams that made it to the championship win and win in different ways.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what you want from this past weekend. You don't want the exact same game to play itself out over two straight games. And I think that's the big thing that a lot of people who watch this sport as much as you and I do want to see the game be played in a variety of different ways, because you want to expose as many people as you can to the sport, and the playoffs are the best time to do it. And so what you had was two games where they were exciting, but they were also played in extremely different ways, which I think is the way that this league needs to be able to do things, because you're experiencing the biggest stars in the game, which I think, A, is the best thing, because you're not you've got players from every team who you want to see play, which is tremendous, because you don't want to see the superstars sitting these games out. You don't want to see the superstars sitting at home or being guest analysts on CBS Sports or anything like that. You want to see them playing on the field. And speaking of the best players who have been playing on the field, I do want to take this opportunity to welcome in Scott Ratliff, who is taking time out of his Monday to once again join us. Big-time friend of the show. And, Scott, first off, congratulations on your season. Congratulations on all you guys were able to accomplish. And how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's not too bad. It's, you know, they say it's the worst day of the year, the first Monday of the off season, but I had a chance to get some work done and then get 9 quick holes of golf in, so I'm having an all right day.
That can't be too bad for the worst day of the year. But as I said before, man, congratulations on the incredible success you guys had this year. I do want to focus on kind of some early reflections about how the Cannon season went, because as we both know, you and I have talked about this a couple times. Tom didn't believe in you guys at all. I was the guy who kept on harping on how good I thought you guys were going to be. Were you surprised at kind of how the end result turned out? Because I don't know if many people expected you guys to be in the playoffs, but not only that, but to give teams a big bang for their buck and almost get to this next weekend. Kind of now that you're able to kind of take a step back, what are your reflections about the season and how much it meant to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a special year. Honestly, if I feel any surprise, it's that we're not playing this week. It kind of felt like one of those years from the time we got together. We had great team chemistry and a lot of guys that fit into roles really nicely. So, you know, we felt like it was our year, and I guess there's still a little sting because, you know, we put ourselves in a position to get to that final game and give ourselves a chance, and obviously, you know, it didn't go our way.
One thing that's coming up, I guess, tomorrow is the Defensive Player of the Year. And for the most part, Tom and I talk about it off and on. It's pretty much it's between you and Joe Fletcher. At what point in time are you able to kind of separate the sting of last weekend and possibly getting ready to receive a major award? And do you posture yourself in any way? Like, do you send texts to Joe and just say, like, hey, man, like, you know I'm better than you? Or what do you do to get ready for something that could be a huge momentification for you individually?
Yeah, it's funny. I obviously am really close friends with Fletch, and I think extremely highly of him as a player. Not something we text about. I mean, I talked to him since the game, but more about team goals, and we're just wishing him luck in the finals and not so much about this award. So it would definitely be a huge honor if there's, you know, one guy that was going to get it, that, and it wasn't going to be me or Chad Wiedmeyer or Brody or somebody from my team. You know, it'd be Joe Fletcher. I think really highly of him as a player and as a teammate and as a person. So it's cool. It's kind of a cool situation, I think, for Loyola fans to see two of the alumni having success. And, you know, I'll be happy with the way my season went, regardless of if I win that award. I felt like I made strides and got better. And obviously it was my first chance to play in a playoff game. So, you know, overall, despite the disappointing ending, yeah, I'm pretty pleased and happy with the way things went.
And last question for me, and I'll throw you over to Tom. What do you have going on in the offseason? Are you running a bunch of camps? Do you tend to focus on other things besides lacrosse? Kind of, what are your plans for the next couple months before the season ramps up?
Yeah, so I work full-time for LB3 Lacrosse down here in Atlanta, Georgia. So it's full-time lacrosse for me. You know, we kind of have things going on. We do fall club teams and take kids up to tournaments and help them get recruited. You know, we do winter box leagues, and with the Georgia Swarm coming to town, you know, getting the box game going at the youth and high school levels will be a big part of what we do this winter. And then I'm lucky enough to coach a high school team, Greater Atlanta Christian School, in the spring. So the lacrosse never stops for me, but, you know, I wouldn't want to have it any other way. And, you know, of course, I'll take a couple weeks off here, and there's plenty of motivation to get ready for next season. So get back in the gym and back out on the track and, you know, start working towards next year.
Hey, Scott, hell of a season one way or the other. Let's go back to the play. You know, I've seen the replay of the play, I guess I'll call it, more than the Ronda Rousey recap. You guys, you're running down the field as a group. Did you even know it was Gittleman when you made the pass to the, I mean, he was right on top of you when you fed him. Did you know it was him, or did you just pass it to the open man?
No, I knew it was him. It's pretty easy to tell just because of that stick. So I knew who I was throwing it to. In fact, the fact that it was him probably made me more inclined to throw that pass. If you're trying to handle that pass with a long pole or even just a regular short pole, it's probably a tougher pass to handle. But I was confident that he would catch the ball, and I knew that he'd be in a good situation. And, you know, I've seen him score that goal a lot of times, and he scored it against me, you know, when he was a Charlotte Hound, and we were playing them, I don't know, last year, 2 years ago. So, you know, again, he made a great play to get out in front of the defense and create that break. And I saw it was him, and I saw his stick open. And, you know, he did everything right. Unfortunately, Adams just made an even better play.
And this game, you guys came out hot. You were incredibly high in the first quarter. The team was celebrating. Things were going well. Third quarter, things turn around. You guys come out in the fourth quarter trailing significantly in this game. And right away, you feed Seabold for a two. And things literally flipped over. I mean, was this game just, you know, I was on the edge of my seat screaming at the TV the whole time. Was it an emotional train wreck for you?
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, we had been in that situation. I remember when we played Rochester at home. One time we played Charlotte at home, where I looked up the scoreboard and we were down six in the third or the fourth quarter, and we hit two-pointers in those games as well and kind of put ourselves back in it. So it was definitely emotional. You know, it was, didn't seem like things were going our way there, kind of in the mid to late third quarter. But we've been so good at two-pointers all year long that you never really feel like you're out of it when you know you can hit those. So going out for that man-up face-off, you know, Max came up to me and said, you know, this would be a great time to get a two. And, you know, sure enough, we got the ground ball and had an opportunity. And he obviously buried two big ones in the fourth quarter, which, you know, isn't surprising for him to do. So I never really felt out of it. It was definitely an emotional game. It was probably one of the tougher losses I've ever suffered. But it was fun, no doubt about it. I'm sure it was good for the fans, and it was fun to be a part of.
And what, you know, looking back on the entire season, what is the play of the season for the Cannons? What would be, if you were going to have put together a highlight film, what's the play that starts it off?
That's a good question. I guess I haven't really thought back. I mean, the ones that jump out are, I'd say probably my favorite play of the year was our goal to beat Florida down in Florida. I think Florida had the ball with about 20 seconds left, and Jordan made a great save, and he threw an outlet to me, and I threw it over to Brody, and Brody beat everybody down the field and fed Seabold for the winner with 5-6 seconds left, just in terms of excitement. You know, I'd have to say that was probably my top play. And also, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, we had just lost to Rochester going into it. You know, we kind of needed that play to really put us in a good position to make the playoffs. And you know, Brody especially kind of made that play happen. And then Max, who, as he did all year, finished it and came through in the clutch.
And speaking of Rochester, now we got the New York team in Rochester traveling down to Atlanta for the championship. Obviously, you've been on the opposite side of both teams a couple times this season. Who are you rooting for? And is this a little bit of the enemy of my enemy is my friend? Is that, are you forced to take Rochester because New York knocked you out?
You know, I don't think so. I don't know that I'm rooting for anyone. It's definitely bittersweet. I you know, the game being played in my hometown, I very much wanted to be playing in it, and so it's hard for me to sit here and openly root for another team in that game. I think I kind of more root for players that I have relationships with, and there's guys on both teams, as we mentioned, Joe Fletcher, and you know, worked with Greg Grinley a lot and think highly of those guys. And then on Rochester, Kevin Rice is a guy that I've gotten to know really well and become close with and think really highly of. And John Galloway, again, comes down and does a lot of clinics for us. So, you know, I'll more be rooting for those guys, and guys that I'm friends with have great individual performances. And then more so than that, I'm rooting for the game. It's a big deal for Atlanta to be hosting it. And, you know, I'd love to see a huge crowd, and I'd love to see a great, entertaining game. And, you know, I have no doubt that we will.
And who are you taking in the title?
It's tough. I think it's going to be a one-goal game either way. I got to take Rochester. I think falling one goal short last year, you know, winning this thing kind of seems to be a process. And I think having the experience of playing in this game last year, you know, sets them up well. But I'll take Rochester by one, say 15-14. But I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that pick. I can't say I know what's going to happen.
And again, James kind of alluded to it. You had a terrific season. You know, whether or not you're still playing, you did everything you possibly could all season long. You know, you were arguably one of the most improved players in the league. and I know you gave James the PC answer earlier, but if you don't win Defensive Player of the Year, is there even a little bit of you that feels slighted and you think that you worked so hard to get that?
No. I think more what my opinion on it is that I think there's kind of a lack of a position acknowledgement. If you look at the NLL, there's transition is kind of considered its own position. And I kind of feel that it should be the same for outdoor, because when you look at what I do compared to what somebody like Joe Fletcher or Chad Wiedmeyer does, I mean, they're different things and they're different positions. And a lot of my impact comes, you know, yes, I obviously play defense and I try to guard the best midfielder on the other teams, but a lot of it comes off face-off wings and pushing transition offense and making plays in between the lines. So I wouldn't feel slighted, again, because of how highly I think of the other guys that are being considered for this award. I wouldn't feel slighted at all, but I do think it's worth bringing up that, you know, there probably should be offensive, defensive, and transition as kind of three separate positions with the impact that defensive middies and long stick middies are able to have in the game today.
I like that answer, especially since the short stick middies don't get a chance to even play in the All-Star game.
Right, and I mean, that's a joke, because that whole, even in college with them not getting All-American, Pat Laconi and Josh Hawkins, when we were at Loyola, were arguably the most important part of us winning a lot of games, and that position gets dodged more than anybody else on the field. It's such a valuable position that just goes unmentioned way too much.
And last one for me, and as I'm accustomed to, I'm going to put you on the spot again. Aside from yourself, who's the Cannons MVP this season, and who would be the Rookie of the Year?
Oh, definitely tough answers. I mean, we had three great rookies, and not just on the field, but in the locker room. They were awesome. So that's tough. I think I'd probably have to give it to Glesner because of the impact he had late and some of those clutch plays in the championship. But all three of them, Wells, Ryan, I mean, they all had moments and had great games and showed that, you know, they're going to be really good players in this league. Ryan Tucker's one of the smartest rookies. I mean, he made so many heady plays and veteran-type plays. And, you know, obviously Wells was a great quarterback and a great fit for us. But, you know, Glez really wowed a lot of us there in the last couple games as he kind of got his feet back under him and found his shooting stroke. He's a great shooter and a great player. So, and obviously on top of that, a great guy and a great leader, and we'll be doing good things for our country. So, I guess I'd have to go with him in terms of the rookies. I think what made this team so cool was that every game there was a different MVP, and you never really knew who was going to kind of be the guy to step up and make those plays. If I had to pick one other guy, I'd probably go with Max Seabold. He just consistently, even the games where, you know, to the average eye, it may look like he's not doing too much. He doesn't have a bunch of goals or assists. I've never seen a D-Mitty get beat less. You know, he plays incredible defense. He was always winning ground balls off the wings or face-offs and on the defensive end, earning us possessions and getting in and stopping transition. And then, you know, when it came down to clutch time, it seemed like he was always the guy that was ready to step up and take and make the big shot. So there could be a lot of different answers. Emela and Manny and Jordan in the cage. And, again, I think I've mentioned Chad and what all he did this year a couple times. But if I had to pick, I'd give it to Max.
Well, Scott, I really appreciate you coming on with us. And before we let you go, and before I give you all the accolades, I'm sorry, bestow upon you that we can do, you did mention the fact you played 9 holes today. How's your golf game going? And what other players do we need to be worried about if they ever challenge us to an 18 round, hanging around?
You know, I'm right in that spot where I'm shooting under 100 consistently, but I'm in the mid to high 90s. I'm anxious to improve and to get down into the 80s. So I'm trying to play as much as I can, do things like this, get out of the office and get on a 6:45 tee time and try to squeeze 9 in. So I'm kind of at that breaking point where hopefully I can get over the hump. I know Will Manny has a good golf game, or at least he seems to be doing it all the time. I actually don't think I've ever played with him. But as far as the Cannons go, it's him and Brent Adams are the two that seem to be playing the most. And, you know, I always see it on their Snapchat. I wonder when they work, but they're the guys that I'm gunning for this off season.
Well, shoot. Yeah. Well, you seem like you're right in my wheelhouse, which is perfect. But
great. Let me know when you're in Atlanta.
Place.
We'll, we'll hit the links.
Ah, man, I'll do it. Like I said, I got some family down there, so I might take you up on that. But either way, man.
Perfect.
We really appreciate you coming on throughout the course of the season. Continued success moving forward. We're all rooting for you. I know Tom and I are rooting for you tomorrow. If we had votes, I know where we'd place it, and it'd be right in your camp. But I know that the recipient of the award is going to be a deserving candidate, and if it's not you, then it's rigged, in my opinion. But either way, man, we really appreciate you coming on throughout the course of the season. Have fun throughout the course of the offseason. Continue success for the rest of the year.
Awesome. Hey, really appreciate it. And, you know, great job. I enjoy, you know, listening and reading to all your guys' stuff. So appreciate what you guys do. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Scott. Well, take care. And once again, guys, that's Scott Ratliff, and we are more than happy to have him on. We consider him a big-time friend of the show. And, Tom, everything that you hear from him, I mean, there's a lot of – you can kind of read into it a little bit. He does think that Rochester's going to win this game next week, which is kind of amazing because there's not going to be a whole lot of people who are going to give your Rattlers that big of a chance heading into this game strictly because of the name recognition on the other side of the field. And I think that's doing a disservice to your team. I think it's doing a disservice to how well they've played. We're going to get into that here in just a second. But first, I do want to get into the award season because that is something that's going on right now. There have been a couple awards that have been given out, which is kind of awesome because they're kind of doing this little staggered to where you don't figure it all out on kind of a one-day big boom. You kind of have an opportunity to talk about each individual award. And I don't want to extend this out any longer than it should be, but were you surprised by anyone who won an award so far leading into the awards that are going to be handed out in the next couple of days, which are kind of the big ones?
No. It's one of those things that there were quite a few guys I thought, if it had gone to, we'll take goalie of the year. Adams won it. Drew Adams won goalie of the year. And if you watch the game against Boston, he deserved it. He really did. He stood on his head and played amazing, and he is on a different level compared to all other goalies on this planet. He just is insane when it comes to his ability. But every one of these guys, I mean, if you ever go to a lacrosse camp or an MLL game and watch these guys warm up shooting, it's scary. I mean, it is literally scary. I watched a Minnesota high school All-American take shots at a camp here in town, and he flat said he couldn't see the ball. And you know, this is a kid who's going to be a senior in high school, he's played plenty of lacrosse in his career. He's not on the level with these guys, but he couldn't see the ball. That shows you just how scary it is and how great these goalies are. But if Tyler Fiorito would have won this, if Brian Phipps would have won it, I could have defended either one of those guys just as well because they played just as well this season. This was a very close vote. I think both of those guys deserve recognition. It's one of those things that it would be great if there was a second and a third place, but at the same time, there isn't. And Drew Adams definitely deserved the award. Rookie of the Year, I thought, was another one that was close. Sankey was tremendous for that team. He was the Charlotte Hounds offense for quite a bit of the season. He was ridiculously good. He still is ridiculously good. His future is tremendously bright in what he's able to do. On the flip side, Lyle Thompson, that's a tough one not to go with. He was incredible in the stretch run. Once he figured out the outdoor game, he just exploded and he was unstoppable. He found his shot. He found his rhythm. We talked about it on last week's show where he, on the play where he missed and his shot got blocked and he scooped it up in the middle of about six guys, put it up above his head and fired it in. That's not possible. I mean, that's the only way I can say that is that's not possible. And so, but Sankey deserved it just as much. He you know, if anything, Florida was going to have the same record with or without Lyle. Joey Sankey improved Charlotte tremendously when he joined that team. So that's the way I look at that award. Defensive Player of the Year, I love Scott Ratliff, great player, great guy, terrific off the field. He's absolutely right. His game is transition. He is so dangerous with the ball. And you know what? He doesn't get enough credit for his on-ball defense because of how good he is as a transition player. He played terrific on-ball defense all season long, and you know what? That goes underrated. Now, Joe Fletcher on the flip side, yeah, he is the best defender in the league. He is. So to not say he's not the defensive player of the year is tough, but he's strictly an on-ball defender and a takeaway artist, and he led the league in caused turnovers and absolutely destroyed everyone that he guarded all game long. So, you know what? It's been an awesome season. I'm you're pointing out to me offline that I'm going on. And you know what I am, because this season was terrific and every one of these guys deserves every nice thing I could say about
him. Absolutely. I'm going to keep my entire award season rant to a very succinct little thing, because I think that in general, every player that's nominated probably deserves the award one way or another. But my big thing was the Rookie of the Year. And this is an unpopular opinion alert, because I really think Thompson should have gotten the award. I understand that once you figure out exactly what Sankey was able to do for Charlotte, but I also feel like Charlotte's a revolving door. And so when you step foot in the Charlotte locker room at some point in time and you're an offensive talent, you probably could win the Offensive Player of the Year award. If you play an entire season, you can win the Offensive Player of the Year award because you're going to rack up the stats because someone has to. Same thing with the Rookie of the Year award. And until they're able to kind of solidify their situation, like, I honest to goodness don't think that – I know he made the big impacts for that team, but I think if you threw Miles Thompson on that team, he has triple his production. And even though he's figuring it out, indoor versus outdoor. So that was my big issue. And I don't think Sankey deserved to fall, like, to ninth place. I think second place was good. But I think also when you think about the talent level of some of your rookies that I just think Thompson gets it. But then again, I'm splitting hairs, and I don't want, you know, people in Charlotte to hear this and think that I'm against the team. I just have my obvious frustrations. But I just think that in general for the league, you give it to the most talented rookie who made the biggest impact. And I think when you look at situations, it's really tough to give it to someone who just was the only offensive talent on a team that just needed offensive talent. But that's here for there. And speaking of that, I do want to get into something with you, Tom, which I think is going to be kind of a fun little exercise between the two of us. We talked about doing the Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, biggest surprise, biggest disappointment for every team. And what I want to do is take the teams that are not in this playoff and hit it real quick about the biggest surprises for the non-playoff teams. Then we'll get into the championship game. And so I want to start off first with the basic Thompson-led young guns down in Florida. What was your biggest surprise for the launch this season, and what surprised you the most?
Yeah, I get to do another monologue here. A number of things. Trading for Miles Thompson was kind of a shock. I did not see that being the way this team would put itself together, already having Kieran McArdle, already having Casey Powell, already having Kevin Cunningham. They gave Kevin Cunningham away, and he clearly found another home and found some success. So how they put that team together was tremendous. But this team is built for the future. I'm a big Connor Bucic fan. Biggest surprise to me, Connor Bucic led the league in two-point goals.
The biggest surprise to me was that this team didn't take a step forward. We all thought the fact that all these rookies coming in, we knew they were going to be young, we knew they were going to be dynamic, and you really didn't see it till the end of the season. You kind of saw glimpses of what you could get. And so there's not really one individual I really want to point out. We kind of knew what they were, what they weren't, and I think that was kind of evident from the beginning. And so my big thing for them was just the fact that you didn't see it as early as you wanted to, because I think once the entire team got together, they showed you in very, very brief flashes what could be an astounding team for that area. And now it's going to determine whether or not Casey is going to come back from their season. You got a couple question marks, but in general, the underwhelming nature of what they were doing at the beginning of the season was a big surprise to me. We're going to move right on to Charlotte, which is obviously my hometown team, so I'll go ahead and go first. And Tom, I'm going to throw it to you after I say just a couple words. It's Justin Ward. Where was he? He had such a promising season. He disappeared. He was a DNP coach's decision most weeks. He didn't do anything. He was my biggest surprise because a lot of us had big, big expectations for him. I know Joe Keegan's listening to this, who Joe and I were on his bandwagon big time, and wow, what a letdown. What was your biggest surprise for the Hounds?
I'm going to go with personnel as a whole. Sankey really impressed. House really impressed. Kevin Cunningham found a spot with that team. Mike Chanichuk came on late. Michael Earhart is going to be a future star. Kevin Drew showed what he can do. But for every guy that elevated his game, they had at least a guy who took a step back. Josh Dion, where did he go? Justin Ward, where did he go? Thomas DiNapoli, where did he go? This team, if everybody elevates, this team is a significant contributor. But when you get that separation of guys advancing and guys falling, you're in trouble. And unfortunately for Charlotte, more guys fell than advanced.
Next, I want to move on to what used to be our perennial championship roster, Chesapeake Bayhawks, because that was a team to me that the biggest surprise to me was how little everybody factored into a team that was superstar-laden. It's almost the Florida launch situation, but just 10 years advanced, because I thought this was a team that was poised to make a big run, and now that Coach Cottle has kind of stepped down, that was kind of the biggest surprise to me, because it seems like this was a team that was tailor-made for his leadership to make a big late season run, and they just weren't able to put it together. You saw a bunch of players on this team do a lot. But then again, you have people like Kevin Crowley who just can't find their footing. So between the fact that it was a surprise to me that Cottle stepped down, it was a bigger surprise that Kevin Crowley just seems to be in no man's land at this point in time, because it seems like that an MVP season and then it just went, that was a top of the mountain, and when are we going to see the better version of him that we're used to? Tom, what do you think about Chesapeake?
I could sum up Chesapeake's season in a couple of words: NLL and injuries. Those two things altered this team so drastically it's not even funny. As far as what was the surprise, I mean, Matt Danowski had more assists than goals. I'm not sure that's ever happened before. That has to be a shock for anybody. The other thing was is that Cottle stepped down. This is his team. He built this team. This is the team he handpicked, put together, built, assembled, everything you want. And he's not walking away from it, but he's walking away from it.
Now, the last team I do want to touch base on real quick, I'm not going to get into the teams that were in the semifinals because I don't think you need to have huge surprises, even though after we talked to Scott, we kind of know the surprise was Boston. But the next team I want to talk about was Denver. And the big surprise to me was the fact of how they kind of acclimated without the veterans they lost. You look at the team and you look at exactly who they've lost and who they're losing moving forward, I think was the biggest surprise. Because you see a team that was decimated by the loss of a guy like Lupin. And now you've got guys like Anthony Kelly getting out of there. Jesse Schwartzman is a big question mark. And so it's going to be kind of crazy to see exactly what this team looks like moving forward when this has been a team with a lot of stability. And so it's going to be kind of crazy to see what they look like moving forward to next year. And this year, my big surprise is, could this be the last hurrah this team for a little while? Tom, what do you think about Denver?
Denver, I got Mike Bocklet. Came out of nowhere. We had him on the show last week. He led that team in scoring and was phenomenal all season long. Where did this guy come from? I could go negative with this one very, very easily with how many people they played and how they were searching for a role, searching for defense. Jesse Schwartzman struggles and then subsequent retirement. I'm going to stay positive and say Mike Bocklet, tremendous stud.
Well, with all that being said, Tom, we've spent, 40 minutes talking about everything but the elephant in the room, which is about to knock me over if I really were to look around, and that's the championship game, because there is a lot to break down between the Rochester Rattlers and the New York Wizards. I think someone coined it the Reptile Bowl or something. Like, it just seems like that's kind of apropos to name it something like that. And these are two teams that you know, have somewhat of a pedigree being here. You look at a team like Rochester, and they were a team that last year came down the wire and almost brought home the trophy. And you see New York, who is a team that was prohibitive favorite, to do so this year. And what I want to do, Tom, is I want to go ahead and break down this game a little bit. I don't want to break down necessarily the big X's and O's, because I think that's for people who are smarter than I am, and probably people who you can talk to, because you are obviously smarter than I am. But I do want to know what matchups, real quick, are the most interesting to you, because there are some that are a little bit more advantaged from one side and the other. But in general, if you're looking at an individual matchup, what two players do you think are going to be able to lock horns to make the difference in this game?
Oh, I could take the low-hanging fruit here and talk about Greg Grandlin and how great he is, and how LoCascio and Joel White have to figure out a way to make it a 50-50 ground ball and give themselves a chance. But I'm looking at Jordan McIntosh. Rochester is so good and has made it this far because they can play with so many different styles. They can go speed on you. They can do downhill dodges. They can razor pick from X. They can cut from behind. They can work the feed game. They have two guys in Jordan Wolf and Kevin Rice who are tremendous feeders from behind, but can also finish. So you have to respect their ability to go. And they worked a two-man game with Randy Stotts and Mark Matthews and Jordan McIntosh so well. This team is just, it's built to attack you so many different ways. And the defense, when they get hot, they're still very talented. They struggle with on-ball defense still because they don't have Mike Manley to push somebody around. And that's going to be an issue in this game. They don't have that big physical defender. But at the same time, they have a lot of quick guys who have good sticks who can handle the ball and take it away. John Late has been terrific at times this season and really been a top-flight defender. But I'm looking for Jordan McIntosh to make an impact in this game. He might have to take some face-offs so that you force Greg Grandlin to stay on the field and play some defense, or you force him to go against somebody who can take the ball away from him once he gets it. That's going to be an interesting aspect of this game and how he plays. And you know where my allegiance lies in this game. I love Coach Spolina. I love Jojo Marasco. I love that Lizards team, and I have trumpeted their horn all season long. But I have been a Rattlers fan since we lost the West Coast teams. It's just been that way. Or the West Coast teams. It's just been that way. I'm rooting for them all the way. I'm not going to be heartbroken if either of these teams wins. I'm going to be happy for both teams. I've got friends on both teams. But my heart lies in upstate.
Oh, well, now we've got that out of the way. Golly. Good. All right. Well, tell you what, I'm going to take, before we get into individual matchups, before we get into positional battles, I'm going to go ahead and take the low-hanging fruit, because I think that is going to be the big aspect of this game, is whether or not Rochester can battle the beast, because that's going to be the big thing. Because I think if you look at teams that are dominant throughout the course of this league, they have dominant face-off guys. And we've talked about this, I mean, on a week-in, week-out basis. And it's the fact that Grenlian is at a historic pace as far as getting his team possessions. And when you get a team possession, you have to depend on the people around you. But you look at New York, it's a superstar roster, up and down. And it starts and ends with Greg Grenlian. And so, to be honest with you, that is going to be the big matchup to me, is whether or not if Rochester can hold up, if they can get it even to just a 60-40, which I think that's the doable line. I think that's the line of demarcation. That's where you have to stick your foot in the ground and say, if Rochester cannot get above 40% faceoffs, I don't think they can win this game. And that is just based off what I know about possession lacrosse. I think that New York has a better chance of doing anything at that point in time. And that's just saying they have a chance, which is kind of one of those weird things. I'm not writing Rochester off by any stretch of the imagination, because I know what this team is capable of. We've all seen exactly how they can operate when their backs are against the wall. Being an Ohio Machine team, which, to be honest with you, a week ago I would have put almost money down they would have won the championship. So they're obviously beating good teams. However, Ohio's big Achilles heel throughout the course of their existence has been the faceoff. And that's one thing that New York right now has a big advantage on in Grenlian. And I just think that 60-40 needs to be the goal for Rochester. Tom, do you think there's
you gotta look back at this past weekend's game. They played a tough Ohio team. They lost 66%+ of the faceoffs, and they still found a way to win that game. Ohio had plenty of possessions with a very high-powered offense, very similar to what they're going to see in New York, a team that can score in bunches, can score quickly, can beat you in the six-on-six. They lost the faceoff battle. The defense was able to force enough turnovers, cause Ohio to take enough bad shots. We've seen that same thing from New York. I think New York got battle-tested in this last game. Boston gave them everything. It gave them everything they needed to propel them to a championship. They needed that test. They needed somebody to punch them in the mouth so they could stand there and see how it was going to go. But at the same time, Rochester faced a team and faced a situation very similar to what they're going to see. So both teams got a great lesson in that last game. And I don't know that the faceoff X is going to have as big of an impact unless New York propels that faceoff into multiple goal runs.
And you know what, like, I do agree with you. However, I just don't think – I think that once you get a possession, it's who you get the ball on the stick. Who has the ball at that point in time? And at some point in time, Rabel's going to have the ball on his stick in every possession, you would assume, for New York. If Rabel doesn't touch the ball every possession, they're doing something wrong. And he's the type guy who – For as much as you and I malign him, which we both do, we both are fans of his on certain levels, we're not on other levels, but at some point in time, the thing that I have to admit to myself in watching him is that I'm mesmerized with what he can do with the ball. And you saw it this past weekend, he's the guy that makes the extra pass. And there's no one on Ohio who is able to do that, in my humble opinion, right now. I mean, unless you're getting behind the cage, unless you're really in specific situations, they don't have that guy who can just initiate and then make somebody else better. And that's the thing that I really question on how Rochester's going to be able to handle. Because at some point in time, Rabel's just going to have his – you've got to give the ball to him. If you're New York and Rabel isn't the ball on the stick, I don't know, like 40% of your offensive possessions at minimum, like it's ridiculous. But – he's the guy who can make the other people around him better. Ohio didn't have that, and that's my big question as far as a Rochester fan's concerned. How do you think that they're going to handle him? Because there's nobody like him. There's no one like him on Ohio especially. We've seen Ohio. Ohio sometimes just gets in a real isolation-type ball unless they toss it behind the cage to a couple people. But how are they going to handle Rabel?
You can't. I mean, there's no nice way to put that. You do your best against him. I thought Boston did a heck of a good job. Ratliff played awesome on-ball defense. I think Joel White is incredibly capable of doing the same thing. It's going to be a very difficult task, and New York has a ton of weapons. But now I get to wave my Syracuse flag high and proud and say that the guy
oh,
that if I'm in New York or Rochester's shoes, the guy I'm the most worried about is JoJo Marasco, because he's the guy that does make that extra pass. On the final play of the game, coming down the field after Gittleman's shot, Marasco makes the pass to Rabel. The second assist is going to be important in a lot of situations, and Marasco is that guy. He's the one who started the scoring for New York. He's the one that got it going. He's a huge part of this game for them. They need him to be involved and be involved early, because when they're ticking, Crotty, Marasco, Palasek, those are the guys that are making plays. Rabel and Pinnell are going to make enough plays to keep you in the game. It's those other three that are going to make the plays that win it.
Well, Tom, you mentioned something that I want to get into right away, because it's the X factor. It's the X factor in this game, and who you think is going to be the guy who's going to make or break whether or not one team wins or loses. And we've talked a lot about offense. We've talked a lot about face-offs. I'm going to go directly back to offense. I know it's kind of segueing to the defense, but I really can't do that. The X factor for me in this game is going to be Ned Crotty, because I think that he's the guy. And I mean, you want to hear me wave my Duke flag? There it is. But I think Ned Crotty is going to be the guy in this game that's going to provide a spark at some point in time. And if you can't get a guy like Ned Crotty involved, you're doing something wrong. You might have Jojo Marasco. You might have people like Tommy Palisak. You might have Rabel. You might have Pinnell. But if you can't get Ned Crotty involved with the amount of talent that he has and the playmaking that he has, you're doing something wrong. And I think Spallina's going to find a way to get Crotty involved and get involved his ability to make a playmaking situation that much better based off the fact of what he's doing. In your mind, who is going to be the X factor for either team heading in this game?
I'm doing the players to watch. I'm throwing three guys up from each team because I can, because you can't tell me not to. I'm sticking with the two I went with, Marasco and Palisak. My third one is Drew Adams. Everybody's going to ask why not Renly, and I think you know what you're going to get from him. I think we all expect him to go 65, 70, 75% in this game. I think that's logical. Drew Adams can win this game on his own. If he gets hot and takes over, he can steal as many goals as, or saves as you need to get him in a position that New York can win this game fairly easily. The other two, if they get going, New York is winning. I mean, if you start seeing Palisak show up and dominate, you start seeing Marasco show up and play well, draw slides, make those goals, New York is running away with this game. On the flip side, I already talked about Joel White. He's everything. He's going to be on the wing on every single faceoff. He's got to slow New York down, get the ball back, get it back up the field. He's going to have to play defense probably against Rabel for a good portion of this game. So that's going to be very dangerous and something you got to watch out for. Galloway, because it's an obvious choice, another guy who can take over a game. I always say when he's clapping his hands and getting pumped, Rochester is either in the game or winning the game. You got to watch what he can do early. And Kevin Rice. Jordan McIntosh is still a big part of this team, still a big factor. I think New York is going to take Jordan Wolf out of this game by putting Joe Fletcher on him, limiting his opportunities, limiting his ability to make the huge plays. The guy who steps up next in line and gets New York's second-tier defender, and nothing against New York's defense. But when you talk about Joe Fletcher, the next guy on the list, the drop-off is significant. It's nothing against those guys. It's just Fletcher is so much better that there automatically is a step down. And Kevin Rice has shown that he can step up in situations. He can feed from behind. He can attack from behind. Everybody talks about how he loves to do the question mark dodge. That's a real easy statement to make. When you attack from behind, a question mark dodge is almost essential. But Rice is a facilitator for this team. He stepped up with them moving Wolf around to try to get him in more opportunities. I think he's going to be a huge factor in this game. And he's another guy that if he gets multiple points and starts racking it up, that means Rochester's doing what they tried to do and getting what they needed to do to get done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of those situations are wrong. However, there are two players on Rochester that we have not yet mentioned, which drives me nuts. I'm so pumped that they're some of my X factors for Rochester. Number one, John Galloway, who I cannot believe you haven't mentioned. But John's going to be huge. He has the exact same impact that Drew Adams has, because if he makes those big saves early in this game, he energizes the defense. He makes sure that everyone knows that he is going to be the guy who they can at least have a little bit more of an aggressive style in this New York offense, and he's going to back them up. A couple big saves from him early in the game could make or break this entire defense, because if they somehow allow a couple easy goals to go by, it really can ruin you, especially with the offense that New York's able to trot out on a week-to-week basis. And so John Galloway making a couple saves is going to be huge. The next thing I want to talk about is Jordan Wolf. Just because Jordan is one of those players who is kind of taking the torch for the next wave of these players. And he didn't have a great semifinal. He only had one assist. But he's also an impact player who can draw away a little bit of the defense, draw away a long pole, and worst case scenario, he can make other people have huge advantages. So it could be a great situation for him. And with only really a couple minutes left, Tom, I feel like we've kind of run our course. What do you think this game is going to run down to? And what do you think is going to happen? And then finally, what's your prediction for the game in Atlanta next weekend?
I'm with Ratliff. I'm going to say this is going to be a close game, but I'm not confident in that prediction because I could see the dice falling in such a way that, that either of these teams runs away with it. It's very possible. We've seen both teams play really, really well and really, really poorly. I'm a Rochester fan. Everything about me picks them. My mind tells me New York has the advantage in this game and that they're the money pick and that they're going to be the team. But, you know, Ratliff said it, Rochester has the experience. They came into this playoff knowing they lost this game last year. There's very the motivating factor to win the championship after having lost it the year before is a tremendous thing, especially in lacrosse and in this situation. And this team wants this so badly that we saw what they were able to do to slow Ohio down. I think they're going to have to do that again and play just a little bit better, but I have to pick Rochester.
I mean, what's the final score? Like, who's the MVP? Give me a little something, Tom. I need to be able to hold you to the fire against something whenever something bad happens to whatever prediction you're going through.
Give me Rochester winning 16-13, and the MVP is going to be Galloway.
You know what? Actually, that's something that actually, I mean, when you think about it, that not only could happen, that's actually a pretty likely situation. If Rochester wins, Galloway is a very likely MVP candidate. However, I'm going to go the other way. I think New York wins. I think that it is quick out of the gate. I think that is not – I think experience in the championship game for one team, when you lose as much veteran leadership as you have for Rochester, doesn't really equate whenever you go in there the year after. I'm going New York. I'm going New York big. I think New York makes this not ridiculous, but I think at some point in time they kind of seal it up and then kind of lose a couple goals late. So I'm going to go New York 18-14. MVP is ceremoniously given to Paul Rabil, even though it's probably going to be more along the lines of a Matt Gibson, Tom Palisek, Ned Crotty, who probably deserves it. But I think they're going to end up giving it ceremoniously to Rabil because he's going to be involved in a lot of this. You could probably give it to Drew Adams because he's going to be the big guy as far as this is concerned. But I think that's going to be the end result, even though already Tom's already grilling me on social media about my prediction. But you know what? I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. And that is kind of the fun about what we're doing. Either way, make sure you guys tune in. This weekend, Atlanta, it's going to be kind of exciting. Make sure you check out all of the statistical analysis that Joe Keegan's on Laxert.com because we are presented by them. And hopefully you guys have a fun weekend. Hopefully everyone watches this. And if Tom, by the way, the past couple weeks I've actually cut off Bovey. Bovey, you got any last quotes you want to get in?
Awesome having Scott Ratliff on. I will fess up 100 times out of 100 to my totally doubting him and his Boston teammates this year. Expansion is on the horizon. It's the worst kept secret around. I've heard rumors that we're actually going to see helmets for the new teams at championship weekend when they make the announcement. Should be pretty exciting. Should be kind of fun. I'm ecstatic about that as a helmet fanatic and freak. So that's going to be awesome, but it is going to absolutely wreck all four of these playoff rosters. When expansion happens, these teams are going to get cherry picked apart. I feel for guys like Ratliff and the situation and everything because they're going to lose a ton of teammates that are going to be, you know, the guys he talked about, the guys he's going to want to play with again next year, the guys that are his buddies, that locker room, cut it in half because that's the way it's going to look for next year.
Well, that being said, like I agree with you, and I think that the thing is it's going to kill my favorite team. It's going to kill the Hounds because we're going to get the third pick instead of the first pick, so bye-bye, Kavanaugh. Bye-bye, Miles Jones. Whatever. Either way, neither here nor there. You guys have a great week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week, and we look forward to a great championship. Thanks for listening. Turn to laxert.com. And for Tom, I'm James. You guys have a great week.